Welcome to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. I'm your host, Kevin Nagani. Today, we've got the whole band together for the first time this season as we take a closer look at Monday's national title game between LSU and Clemson. And we had a ton of fun with the guys sharing their stories. Also tomorrow, we'll do a little more title game talk with Chris Fowler, who's the voice of the national championship game, as well as college football analyst Emmanuel Acho joining us. And then we'll get back together on the other side next Wednesday to break down what we saw between LSU and Clemson. Something else we want to hit on here, and that is the offseason. I can't believe it's less than a week away. I know that's a little depressing for many of us, but it makes it all the more important to let you know that you have to subscribe to the show. The offseason is, it's long, cold, and dark, right? But we're working on some things behind the scenes here that should kind of get you warmed up, thinking about spring ball, and give you your college football fix. And one last thing before we get started, I got to let you know, ESPN's First Draft podcast with McShay and Kiper and Chris Sproul is back. I know it's sad that we're on the verge of being done talking about football until August, the games. But if you're like me, you love the NFL draft, and we've got so much to fill that void. Check it out. They covered Todd's first mock draft on the first episode. You could find it wherever you're listening to this. Now, on to the show.
The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Got an extra week before the national championship game. It gives us time to digest and also get ready for the big showdown between LSU and Clemson next Monday night in New Orleans. Also gives us the chance to get Kirk Herbstreit and David Pollock together for this podcast. What's up, fellas?
How we doing?
What up, what up?
It's good to have you guys on board. And I just want to remind you guys that today's episode of the College Football Podcast is brought to you by Allstate. All season long, mayhem showed up on the football field and in the rankings. And even though the season is coming to a close, mayhem could still show up on your turf. So get better protected with Allstate. Guys, we're going to talk about the matchup. And we're going to talk about the game. I can't wait for that. But in the last 24 hours, we've had a lot of college football news, from Tua Tagovailoa deciding to turn pro on Monday. And then in the last couple of hours, Matt Rhule deciding to leave Baylor and go to the NFL and take the Carolina Panthers job. Herbie, let's start with you. Your first thoughts on Matt Rhule leaving Baylor and then taking this opportunity to go to the next level. Everywhere he's gone, he's been successful. Now the big challenge is coaching an NFL team.
Well, all three of us know him pretty well, and seems like every year there's another job out there for him. You know, last year he turned some of the NFL opportunities down, stayed focused on Baylor. You know, he had Baylor or Oregon when he left Temple. He's been an assistant coach and coached almost every position on the field. He coaches with an intensity. David and I, we talked about it on the field at the Rose Bowl day on January 1st about just how he leads and how he gains respect in the way he communicates with his players through the good and the bad in the season and the off season. And so it's not a surprise, I think, for any of us that know him really well, that he continues to get these opportunities. And I guess, I don't know, David, maybe the Carolina opportunity was just too good to be true, and he decided to kind of scratch that itch this time instead of turning his head away from it.
Yeah, and the offers were going to continue to roll, and the Giants obviously were interested, yeah. And the Jets a year ago, and that's, it speaks to who he is and what he is, and what Kirk was talking about was cool is that he's never hid anything from his players. Like, he has team meetings and brings them in. Is like, listen, guys, I'm going to interview for the Carolina Panthers job. Hey, guys, I'm going to interview for the Jets job a year ago. So he's very transparent. He's got a bigger mission in life than just football. And if you spend some time with him, he's a phenomenal human being. And it's not a surprise why all the guys will relate to him. The grown men in a locker room, like Urban Meyer, I would question whether he could walk in an NFL locker room and be successful, because it's a different clientele. It's not college kids that are, you know, that are naive. This is, a lot of these guys have been in the league 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 years, and they know, and they're set in their ways, and they're adults and they're grownups. And Matt Rhule is an adult, and he is going to meet with these guys, and they are going to love him from Jump Street, and he'll be honest with them and tell them what they need to do to improve, and probably found a situation. Cause just like Baylor, Kirk talked about, he turned down Oregon. He found a situation that fit him. Carolina is a situation that he feels fits him, and there's a reason he picked it. And I'm not going to bet against the Carolina Panthers now.
Yeah, truth be told, I'll never forget the phone call, because he was coaching in the NFL. He was an assistant with the Giants, and then the Temple job opened up, and he gave me a call, and we talked a little bit about it. And I kind of feel like a proud papa to see him develop and go through this pipeline. And he's earned everywhere he's gone the ability to make the choices that he's made, where I want to go to an environment where I get to decide what's going on. I think he's going to get that at Carolina. Texting him this morning about the conversation, he's beyond pumped. Now he has the task of finding a quarterback or figuring out what he wants to do moving forward with Cam Newton. I think he will find a ton of success in Carolina. Just be patient, Panthers fans, because the guy can make some turnarounds, as we've seen in 3 years at Baylor, what he did and how he turned around a 1-11 squad to a team that won 11 games and that played, you know, I think if they had a healthy quarterback, it may be a different story with Oklahoma and potentially against Georgia in the last time that he was out. Now,
the other big story. Nice.
Already no, excuses, I'm providing context, Pollock. I'm providing context.
We do this every week, Herbie. Golly, just the little caveats and the, yeah. Well, anybody could be, Oklahoma could be undefeated. Just a couple plays.
I'm providing context on what he was dealing with. Yeah. So listen, I know you don't follow our Monday podcast when Herb Street and I do it, but we actually do a podcast without you two, okay? And everything goes over pretty well. The big story in the last 24 hours, though, is Tua Tagovailoa. And I think a lot of people were anticipating that maybe he's going to come back. Herbie, your first reaction, especially after your conversation with him last month where you sat down with him, and it felt like the vibe was that maybe he was debating the idea of staying for his senior season in Tuscaloosa, and then yesterday making the announcement that he's turning pro.
You know, a lot of these guys, everybody makes a decision, whether it's themselves, you know, their folks, a high school coach, a mentor, their college coach, their position coach, whoever their immediate circle is. You gather as much information as you can get, and you make a decision. More often than not, it's a business decision for these guys. And I think with Tua, with the injury and not being able to work out for the NFL before being drafted, I think that when I visited with him, there was a legitimate concern about whether or not he was going to be a late first, maybe an early second. And then as time went on and the season kind of winded down, and they were able to gather more and more information, and they were able to talk to more and more NFL doctors about his evaluation, I think he, and especially I think his father, got to a point where they were comfortable with making a decision to come out. And it would lead me to believe that the information that they gathered, that they felt that they're going to be selected early enough to appease what they wanted to be able to achieve. And at the end of the day, and talking with some folks in Tuscaloosa, I think he was very torn emotionally. You know, I think there was part of him that wasn't maybe quite ready to make that leap and to make that decision. And then, like I said, I think his dad, I think, really was focused on trying to help his son make this decision. And I think at the end of the day, he helped give him some clarity on what needed to be done. And obviously all of us who followed him and spent time with him, I know the three of us all wish him the best. I think it's going to be great to see where he goes, and hopefully that injury is fully recovered. And, you know, I don't know, David, I don't know if it's realistic for him to play in 2020. And I think whoever picks him probably looks at maybe the bigger picture, and maybe it's almost like a redshirt year that first year, and then he comes out swinging in 20 and 21.
Yeah, and there's a lot of optimistic, you know, he's optimistic he can be throwing in several months, but you never know how everything will go. But you know, covering him the last several years, he's a first class kid. And I can tell you this, from making decisions like this, cause I had to do it my senior year, it's tough, man. And you have to, Kirk said, rely on his dad, and you have to rely on people, man. Cause Here's the thing. There is no right answer when you're making this decision. You can come back. Like, I was projected to be a first round pick my junior year. I didn't want to leave. I wanted to come back and win a championship. I loved the college life. I loved being at the University of Georgia. I loved competing with my teammates. I was Peter Pan. I wasn't ready to grow up yet, you know, and that's, you know, you always, like, I've sat down and met with so many people. Roquan a couple years ago when he was making a decision. And it's just, there is no perfect decision. It's just about a decision that's good for you. And he won a national championship. You got to think it too. He's had four surgeries since he's been at the University of Alabama. Like, that's a lot that he's taken on his body. Another big blow that really affects your draft stock even more. But there is one thing that's very clear. He'll be the second quarterback taken, I think, in this draft. Yeah. There is a big gap between him and third and fourth with Herbert, Easton, whoever you want to go down the list.
Like, think about it. And there's, you watch NFL games on Sunday, David, there's a need for quarterbacks. And I'm with you. You know, there's going to be a lot of talk about Herbert and look how pretty he looks at the combine. Look how tall he is. And there's big Jacob Eason. And all I know is just turn on the film and 13 makes every throw. I think there's two quarterbacks in 2019 that are at a different level mentally as far as processing, working through progressions. And it's Burrow and Tua. And I think Trevor's on his way there, but you got to remember he's only, what, his second year. I know he's played a lot of games in only his second year, but he's, think about Joe Burrow's 23, 22, 23, whatever he is.
Yeah.
And Tua's been around for a while himself. And so I think those two are at a different level. And I think you're right. I think that, I don't know. I haven't followed the draft order. Who needs a quarterback, but
you will soon, brother, cause you're covering the draft again. Let's go.
We know Joe Burrow is playing basically his last game, for us to be able to pay attention to him and cheer for him before he has to go to the black hole in Cincinnati. So
hold up now. If we can fix this, Herbie, we can fix mine and your Bengals. I got the recipe. You take Joe Burrow one. And you take Joe Brady too.
Yes.
Let's go.
I love that.
He's your OC. You pay him whatever he wants. He's
you
an
think
NFL
even
system.
Those guys could overcome the Mike Brown hex? You know, that's a powerful, it's like the dark side of the Star Wars.
Our best chance though, Kirk.
Man, I mean, it's not going to happen. Not with ownership doesn't change.
No.
You look at the NFL, if the ownership
they're determined
doesn't
to ruin everything. Yeah.
Exactly. And you mentioned you don't know where he's going to go. And remember in the last year, there was a belief, which I thought was ridiculous, tanking for Tua, right? And the Dolphins are going to lose all 16 games and be the number one pick to get Tua. And now at five, they could potentially have Tua fall in their lap there.
He's going to the Patriots. He's going to the Patriots.
Come on.
He's going to the Patriots. Kirk, this sets up so beautifully.
Where are the Patriots going to move up?
Oh yeah.
Exactly.
The Patriots are always a move down team. Belichick a couple years ago had Garoppolo as his successor. Brady is father time has caught up.
Can you imagine whether you want or not? Tua went to New England.
Dude. Oh, no. I'm just telling
you. I mean, it's a perfect storybook ending.
Hey, Nick. I mean, Nick and Belichick's already got that relationship. He's already told him all about this
great,
kid.
That would be awesome.
The dynasty would continue. By the way, Belichick could have had this dynasty with like 15 other quarterbacks. So it ain't just Brady that he could have had this dynasty with.
Yeah.
Tua would be the next perfect successor.
That's interesting.
Brady for another year.
So you think, you know, that whole debate with those two, you think if Brady were with a different guy and a different culture, it's not the same. But you think if Belichick had somebody else, so you think it's more about Belichick in this dynasty than it is about Brady?
100%. Okay. I mean, you watch the, he's playing chess. Everybody else is playing checkers. It's just the separation between him and everybody else is absolutely unbelievable. By the way, though, you're watching, you know, NFL weekend this past weekend, the wild card weekend, and it's amazing how much the NFL is changing, Kirk. Like, it's nuts how the mobile quarterback and it's going to be a thing now. You can tell the advantages you get from it. And I think coaches are seeing it, the insane benefit. I think it's, you know, listen, we had the Wildcat a couple years ago, but I think now you got a real, it's not the Wildcat. It's the mobile guys that can just give you that plus one occasionally and give you those big runs. Josh Allen.
Occasionally. Yeah. It's not Lamar Jackson. You don't have to go to that extreme because let's face it, there aren't any freaks like that. I mean, that's a whole different level of exceptional.
Way different.
Like, you know, like defensive coordinators, they draw up, okay, number 52, you're going to be right there in the C gap and you're going to tackle him right there. We got this designed perfectly. And then he's there. The defensive coaches in the NFL did their job. And then it's,
he gone.
Yeah. And it's like, wait a second. We can't, you have to put two. It's not plus one. It's plus two with Lamar Jackson. So the rest of the world is plus one, like a Russell Wilson, like you're saying, once in a while, that third down play or a crucial moment in the game, he can come up with it. You don't have to hang your hat on it, but it's there. And you know, as a defensive player, you have to constantly be aware of that threat. And I'm with you. Steve Young, Michael Vick. I mean, there's been athletic quarterbacks in the past, but I think the trend and the play calling and the success of utilizing these guys and their skill set, instead of saying, we're the NFL, my friend, you bring your athletic ability into my world, you're going to learn how to throw from the pocket. Man, I don't care what it takes, you're going to learn how to do that. Now they're saying, Greg Roman's a great example, now they're saying, hey, man, let's try to figure out how to take advantage of still staying in this world, but, you know, maybe a third of our world gets a little bit out here and gives this defense a little bit more to have to deal with.
That's a great point, especially when you look at the AFC and all the quarterbacks that are still playing, the ability to move around. And you could go back to RG3 and how Washington changed their offense that one magical season and had some Baylor stuff in there to make sure we could still adjust to his talents. And now you're seeing a lot of these coordinators do that, especially Greg Roman, what he's doing in Baltimore. And Pollock, the discussion that you brought up is going to be heavily debated here where I live in New England country, where everybody's talking about Brady or Belichick, and Robert Kraft is facing potentially that question with the future of Brady and where he wants to go as he can test the free agent market. I'm actually with you. I believe what you're saying, but there's a guy who's won six rings, who's 42 years old, could say he's the greatest quarterback of all time.
Can I ask you a question?
Who believes he's the difference maker?
And that's great. And his confidence has been a big part of his strengths. Do you think that Belichick could have done that with 15 other quarterbacks?
I don't know about 15 other quarterbacks, but maybe three or four.
I'm talking about throughout time. I'm not talking about like right now, but I'm saying Peyton Manning could have done that in a heartbeat. Like Peyton Manning easily could have done that with Drew Brees. You're telling me Drew Brees wouldn't have done that with Bill Belichick? I think he'd have done that in a heartbeat.
I mean, there's a lot of other factors that play into this because Sean Payton's a great offensive mind as well. So I think at the end of the day, don't you gotta
give Brady some of the credit there for execution and decision making and accuracy.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know, man. He deserves some of the credit,
but the main credit deserves to go to Bill
Belichick.
Goes
to Bill Belichick?
Yes.
Culture that he created and the type of guys he brings in. And one thing you love about him, David, is he doesn't put up with any of the Stephon Diggs stuff. Like, guy throws his helmet, it's like, all right, you're done for the day.
Yeah.
Just sit down over there.
Go find somewhere.
Playing. In fact, you can just go to the locker room, you're off the team. You know what I mean?
Team meetings that you hear about with those guys, like on Monday, when they get together, and literally, they just get in the room and watch tape together, and he just rips Brady to shreds and rips everybody to shreds and, like, literally holds everybody accountable and takes in guys like Randy Moss and Dylan and all these guys over the years. He's created that culture. Like, Brady, I'm not saying – Brady's done a great job embracing it and furthering it. You can tell, like, he's adapted to it and adjusted to it. I'm just saying that Belichick – he's the architect. He's the main guy behind it. And Brady's done an amazing job being a part of it and winning so many Super Bowls. And listen, that doesn't matter. He doesn't care what I say.
Last thing on the NFL. Why in the world, if the Patriots, since whatever, 2000, 01, whenever they won their first one against the Rams, we're looking almost two decades. If they don't win it every year, but they're always in the mix, right? That's the bar. And you just talked about accountability. He holds even Tom Brady accountable. If he's going to hold Tom Brady accountable, he's going to hold everybody. Guy crossed the line. You know, next thing you know, you read online, the guy was released. So guys know, man, coach is serious. How come the rest of the league doesn't do that?
You can't.
Why?
It's just like, why can't the rest of the people be Nick Saban? You know,
if it works, why aren't people trying to – ownership. Why aren't they trying to mimic or try to find a guy that's going to say, I'm the coach, you're the player, I know you're making $20 million a year, I know you're making more money than me, but guess what? I'm the boss. You're going to listen to what I say. How come other head coaches don't have that power?
I think it's a salary cap league where you have to be willing to make decisions. And a lot of times if who you draft matters. By the way, when I interviewed with all the teams in the NFL coming out, the only team that asked me, cause my junior year before my senior year coming out, I fell on a houseboat and literally had 32 stitches in my head. It was a crazy accident. There's only one team that asked me about it. It was the Patriots. Yeah. Mm. The only team that even remotely addressed that topic with me, cause it was kind of a one-off thing. It was a freak accident, but why did it happen? What happened that night? Like, I think they all believe and buy in, but you see Belichick, how many coaches are intricately involved in every detail and willing to grind Kirk and willing to be a part of the minutiae and all
the smallest
crud,
little, right.
That takes a special individual that can do that. And I mean, the Saban and Belichick legendary stories of bringing tape to each other across the country back when you used to actually have tape and not can access everything online and devising defenses together, and Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick. And just, I think it's a special guy that can hold people accountable because he does it with everybody, and he's willing to put his money where his mouth is and say, you don't do it, leave. A lot of people in a lot of places are like, wait a minute, we need him to win. We got to have that guy. Now, get out. Like, we'll sacrifice now. And it's been amazing to watch.
You know, the last 3 years, I've had really the good fortune of they've been in the Super Bowl, and he's friends with Kenny Dichter and Wheels Up, and Kenny Dichter has created this. It's Saturday. The game's on Sunday. It's Saturday, wherever the Super Bowl site is. And he has me sit at the front of this room with maybe about 80 or 90 people. They make everybody hand their phones into a basket when they come into this room. And he and I sit at the front of the room, and we do about 45 minutes of just talking about leadership and, you know, the game. He talks about the game. And people have a perception of him based on his press conferences. And you've been around him, David, yourself. He and Nick Saban are the two most misunderstood coaches that I've ever been around. Probably two of my favorite coaches that I've ever been around. And yet when you tell people that, they look at you like you have three heads. Like, how can you say that about those guys? They are evil. I can't stand that. It's like, man, you don't know them. Like, you see these guys stand at a podium and they're trying to get a message to their team or their fan base or whatever they're doing, and they have an agenda, but that doesn't represent who they are as people. And I love both those guys, and man, that special that they have, by the way, on HBO, and I'm sure you both have watched it. How good was that TV?
Oh, it was great.
Well, that's sweet.
Great.
Oh, it was great. And I will add one other thing to this conversation with Belichick and what he's done, especially in the last 15 years. It helps where they play, the division that they play, and all the teams around them cannot be consistently good because they keep on looking for franchise quarterbacks. So he could still win the division, right? At the end of the year, they get better and better. And then it also, when we talk about free agency, when your quarterback takes less than his market value on big deals, you could fit other cap numbers in. And that,
how's that working out for Brady this year, by the way?
Yeah, well,
that's working out great for his weapons this year. That's on personnel for them.
Yeah. And you could have made a conversation too that where would this team be if Antonio Brown, you know, didn't get himself in trouble and he was still a weapon here on this squad, right? Or Josh Gordon doesn't.
Well, if he didn't get himself
get
in, but if he didn't get himself
team,
in,
right?
If he didn't get himself in trouble, he wouldn't have been available. So, I mean,
understood.
It kind of goes hand in hand.
We'll be back in just a moment with actual college football talk on the College Football Podcast. Imagine that. Cannot wait to hear the guys break down LSU versus Clemson. But first, a word from Allstate.
Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
Okay, and this is the College Football Podcast, so let's just talk a little bit more about transitioning to the game. Because honestly, this is great stuff, getting you guys to go back and forth and talk about the culture and the concept of winning. And we're seeing that culture here with Clemson and what Dabo's been doing the last few years. And now Ed Orgeron and changing the culture and the idea of the identity of the LSU Tigers, a completely different team this year, of course, led by their offense. When we talk about matchups, what's the one thing you want to see on the field, Pollock, that you can't wait for Monday night?
I just can't wait to see what your answers for Joe Burrow. You know, I don't know that I've ever consistently watched somebody and watched a team over and over again and just defensive minds. All these guys haven't figured a daggum thing out yet. And he just is on another level. And Brent Venables every year does a great job with, I would argue this is not even close to his most talented defense that he's had by any stretch, but continues to find ways to make plays and adjust. How about the adjustments this past game? And, you know, just, I want to see Venables and that defense versus Joe Burrow. And can you find some form of answers to slow this kid down? Because his system with him and his playmakers and his wide receivers, Kirk, has just been on another level.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a historic year for Burrow, what he's doing with Joe Brady's system. I mean, it's like when Tiger Woods was at his prime, you just run out of things to say about Tiger Woods. That's where Joe Burrow is this year. Now he's got to finish it off and try to win this game. But I've been watching, like David, just a ton of tape, going back and looking at games. And Auburn's the only team that came up with enough wrinkles to keep Joe Burrow where he had to think. And I was talking to Kevin Steele last night about this, the defensive coordinator from Auburn. And I said, man, you went 3-1-7 on him, you know, three down linemen, a middle linebacker and seven defensive backs. And he said, the reason I did that was if you sit there and you let Joe Burrow know that, okay, number 27 is our strong safety, he's going to be over here. Number 18 is our free safety, he's over here. Our corners are out here. If he knows the personnel and he knows where people are, you're dead. There's nothing you can call, you know. Nice. And so you have to constantly have movement. And he said it's the only time he can remember in a game where he's going back. You know, while the offense has the ball, he's looking back. Okay, last time on 2nd and 10, it was, you know, second long, we did this and gave him this look. Okay, so we're not going to go to that, because he said if you get into any kind of pattern that Brady, Ensminger, and Burrow get onto you, and that's why it always looks like he has answers. That's why they always look like they're one step ahead, because they figure out that, okay, oh, this is what they're going to do after about the first or second series. And once they dial it in, you better hold on to your hat, because you bring pressure, they're going to beat you. You sit back, they're going to beat you. And you throw in the back, who's been incredible, Edwards-Helaire. And yep. So, David, you're right. Brent Venables, if anybody can try to come up with a package or some creativity with his,
or several.
Yeah. With the back end, it's going to be, hey, he's got 15 days.
That's the thing.
To get ready.
That is huge to me, is having 15 days. Kevin Steele did not. So 15 days I have now, I got plan A, I got plan B, I got plan C. I can do so much more and now really work Joe Burrow's mind and give him different looks and really mess with him. And because, yeah, he processes information so great and he knows what you're going to do and he attacks. If you got a bunch of different plans, and I think they got a good chess piece to use in Simmons, 11, because he can play safety. He can play linebacker. He can play corner, for goodness sakes. I'm not saying he's the best. I'm saying, but he can, and you can use him as the guy that is sliding around and where is he at? What am I identifying? And maybe cause some hesitation. And then when you do, by the way, not only do you get to cause hesitation, now you got to tackle him and get him to the ground so he doesn't do a scramble drill and so he doesn't get a first down. I mean, in the Georgia game, championship game, by the way, he completed a 20-yard pass to himself, for God's sake. So if everybody's open, he'll just throw it off of a defensive lineman, catch it, and run for 20. I mean, it's going to be fun.
They get five receivers out, which is in the college game, to consistently get five receivers out, progression reads where he's, you know, he's not being told, okay, this is where you're going to go with the ball. He, like an NFL, to me, he's an NFL quarterback playing in college in this system. And he's like an offensive coordinator as far as his mind and his preparation. That's why he's allowed to be able to play so freely, and he sees things as they're happening. He doesn't need to look, you know, all the time about, oh, what coverage is it, coach? Okay. He sees things as they happen, and he's got five receivers out. So if you blitz him, he's like, oh, he welcomes that blitz because the ball is out so fast. You have no chance of getting to him, and he's just going to dump it and find that quick answer. And then if you, like I said, if you decide to press him, and then you got to hold on to your hat with Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson or any of these guys. So be good. It's going to be, that's the side of the ball that everybody's most excited about. But don't forget Trevor Lawrence and that Clemson offense going up against a much improved Clemson defense with Dave Aranda. That's going to be a good matchup over there too.
That's the one thing that stood out when you saw the Fiesta Bowl. I thought Ohio State's physicality on defense stood out, against Clemson's wide receivers. I want to hear your thoughts, Herbie, on LSU's D-backs and the physicality because they did a pretty good job. Now, listen, when you look at the numbers and how many catches Ross and Higgins had, it was quantity, but it was a very short yardage, and it looked like Higgins and Ross were thrown off their game early on.
Well, they got jammed, and I think that talking to the Ohio State coaches and all the film work that they did, they said, you know, I don't think anybody that they played had the confidence or maybe the personnel to challenge these receivers at the line of scrimmage, and we're going to try to do that. And I think Jeff Hafley told me even on the field before the game, he said, we might get embarrassed, but I mean, we got to try it. We got to try something to disrupt the timing. And they felt because of their length, I mean, Ross is 6'4" and Higgins is 6'4", that they felt that they could get into them and hit them and just try to disrupt it and try to make Trevor Lawrence hold on to the football a little bit. And then that would give Chase Young and the rest of the defensive line a chance to get to him. And I think with LSU, they're looking at that film, right? And they're thinking, boy, we got Stingley, who's a different style of corner. He's not a get in your face and jam you. He's more a patient, sit at about 4 yards,
and
confidence
play the ball
in his
like
speed.
Nobody's
yeah,
business,
play the ball,
Lord.
Finds the ball. But that matchup with Stingley and Fulton on the outside, will go a long way, determining who ends up winning that game.
And LSU's built differently than Ohio State inside. And I think that's a big difference in this ball game. I don't think LSU's defensive line is near as disruptive as Ohio State's. And so I think it'll be interesting. I think ETN on the ground becomes a lot more styles make fights. Don't assume just because Trevor Lawrence and them struggle with Ohio State that they're going to struggle as mightily with Clemson in the championship game. With LSU in the championship game. I don't think that LSU's defense is built like Ohio State's defense. So it'll be interesting to watch. I think LSU's a little bit more athletic at linebacker. But it'll be interesting to see Trevor Lawrence running the football will be a big part of this game plan too. It has to be. I don't think, you know, one thing after these championship teams we saw all these years for Clemson, one thing this team doesn't have, Kirk, they don't have a tight end that can hurt the middle of the field.
Right.
I don't think they're healthy at slot. I think Rodgers is back, but I don't think he's not owning the game. He's not dominating the game on the inside. So the inside part of the field hasn't been dominated by Clemson in the passing attack. And I think you got to worry more about the two receivers. But what you saw was ETN at the backfield also had a big game over the middle of the field. So his receiving, Lawrence rushing, another two big components you got to guard in this offense that were big in the championship game or in the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah. And I think you're right. The defensive line from LSU, they're more space eaters. You know, a guy like Shelvin,
big bodies,
350 pounds. I mean, they're looking to just consume linemen. And the strength of their team is their linebackers and their safeties. You know, trying to free up, Divinity, who's back this week, Chaseon, who's really coming on late. He's starting to make plays. Delpit, I think now is healthy and he's playing a little bit more of his familiar role, whether it's back at center field, up close to the line of scrimmage. They love to blitz him. End of the day, if they're going to get to Lawrence, it's going to be a linebacker or going to be a safety. I mean, the D linemen aren't going to get there. And so, I think you can be a little bit more risky because of what David just alluded to. You know, you don't have that big tight end like Leggett used to be there, 16 going down to the middle of the field, or you don't have to deal with Hunter Renfro or Tavis Scott or any of those quick undersized slot guys. Right now, as you said, Amari Rodgers, the guy comes back in 5 months, 6 months from an ACL, still kind of working
big,
his way back.
Brace.
And he's a thick dude. but they don't right now. Now, remember, Braden Galloway came back from that year-long suspension. They didn't use him at all against Ohio State. They'll tell you that he's the receiver that a Leggett is, but he hadn't played in a year. It's 88. So yeah. if the middle of the field does open up, whether it's Rodgers or Galloway, somebody's got to try to make them pay for it. But those big, long receivers, they're more vertical threats on the outside, outside of the numbers kind of thing. And that makes it very different how you approach them as a defensive coordinator, try to force everything to the boundary.
We're 6 days away from the national championship, so obviously opinions can change. And as you guys look at more film and break down things, but as of right now, what's this game going to come down to, Herbie?
I think we have a chance to see some points, you know, like as in, you know, which quarterback has the ball last kind of game. Now, the 15 days of prep by Aranda and Venables, two really good defensive minds, two of the best in the country. And I know a lot of people have knocked LSU's defense, but if you've really studied them, I think it's been a little bit of kind of a trial and error, injuries to some guys, changing some schemes, changing their approach. Finally, I think the Ole Miss game was an eye-opener for them, and I think they were able at the right time get a little bit angry, play a little bit with a chip on their shoulder. I think Dave Aranda went into those meetings and really challenged the team on a personal level, like, hey, you know, people don't think our defense is living up to our standard that we've had for years and years and years. And that's the knock on us right now. And I think those guys kind of looked at each other and looked in the mirror and started to play with a little bit more of an attitude. And then the other thing is they got healthy. And so I think they're playing right now with a lot of confidence. And the 15 days is the only asterisk I would put there. But man, David, I'm hoping that personally, you know, I hope
call
Lawrence,
the game, baby, let's go.
Yeah, man. I hope Lawrence, and Burrow end up having those kind of games where it's kind of like the LSU-Alabama game, where it's just kind of a back and forth type of game. That'd be fun.
I think we got a good chance of that. And, that's what's fun. You got big name quarterbacks. You got the number one pick in this draft. You got the number one pick in the next draft. I mean, you got playmakers all over the field. You got coaches. You got storylines. I think this game will 1000% meet the hype. It'll be fun. Just what we talked about to start with and Venables versus Joe Burrow and, playmakers all over the field. It's going to be awesome. It'll be an awesome build up and it'll be a lot of fun.
Looking forward to it. And, we're going to wrap this up real quick, but I want to hear one other story and I actually want to hear it from the Herb Street perspective. Because we found out before we started taping here that you got Pollock the gig at ESPN. Is that accurate, Herbie?
Nah, he got himself the gig. I just was his biggest cheerleader. I was his biggest advocate and, talked to Lee Fitting about the job that I thought he could do. And then he came on, the show in Atlanta. We had an SEC championship game there and I asked Fitting if he could come on and just do a segment with me, just he and I talking and thought he could do a good job, and he just did what he normally does. He just being himself and just no preparation as far as like memorizing, just talking off the top of his head and knowing the game the way he knows. And I think once he got that one opportunity, I think guys like Lee Fitting and others said, man, this guy's really good. And I think that was it after that.
Kevin, first of all, he's underselling it because he was watching. I don't know how, by the way. You talk about a God thing. I get a text after doing SEC Gridiron Live, which is a Fox show in Atlanta with his viewership of 12, possibly, maybe 13. Kirk lives in Ohio at this point, and literally I get a message from Kirk after the show, and I'll never forget. I'm in there, and I get a message, and he's like, hey, man, I just saw you on this show, and you're doing a great job. I'm like, what? Really? And so I was just absolutely blown away, and then he put the pieces together. So, no, it was definitely all Herb Street because I know my mama didn't even watch, so I know most people in the world weren't watching, bro. I mean, come on now.
That's great. Yeah, you know, Herb Street's going to downplay it, but that's fantastic. And last week we had Ryan Leaf on the podcast, and Ryan shared the story about Herbie getting him into into the Rose game and getting him the opportunity to meet ESPN guys. And
he
I'm
does
like,
it all year
Herb
long.
Street doing this.
No,
this
he does
great.
It all the time, and he does it every single year. He sees things about people and he's got a really good judge of people, but he cares and he'll reach out to everybody who does well. I mean, I've seen him with Rinaldi and Wojo and everybody, like Jen Latta, whoever it is, man. He reaches out to everybody and tells them they do a great job. He's a phenomenal teammate. I wouldn't be on the show without him. I can tell you that.
I just feel like I was lucky enough years ago to get an opportunity to break through and this way, way back, you know, when David was in middle school or elementary school and I caught a break, right? And right place, right time and capitalized on it and just kind of started to grow and develop and always just, I never forgot what it felt like to be that person who needed a break, needed an opportunity. So yeah, I try to, you know, I'll see somebody on TV and if they're doing a good job, I have their cell number. I always try to encourage people, always try to, you know, tell them, to let them know, 'cause there's so much negativity in the world, so much toxic energy around this business and people that ridicule everybody that I think it's once in a while, it's nice, especially if it's heartfelt. You're not just saying it to it, but if you really mean it, I think that, it can help people. So I try to do that. But in David's case, I just opened the door and he walked through and obviously he's been crushing it ever since.
Yeah, Paul, did you hear what Herbie just said? Stop ridiculing people, especially on podcasts, all right? Did you hear that? You could take some advice.
Some people deserve
something.
It, Kevin. Some people deserve it. Your picks were atrocious this year, bro. They were
speaking
atrocious.
Of picks, our last pick, our last pick, I had Clemson, you had Ohio State. So, like, it looks like
And guess what, Kevin?
I'm feeling pretty good heading into the national championship.
I was on the right side, like always, and you were on the wrong side. It just happened to
turn
out.
No, how's that possible?
By the way, we haven't even talked about that.
If Ohio State and Clemson played 10 times, Ohio State would win 7. They got, it was a perfect storm for Clemson to find a way to win that game.
I think that's what's hard, honestly, for Ohio State is,
yes,
they really outplayed them. They really had opportunity. They had a chance for a Mike Tyson knockout and Clemson's defense came up with stops in the red zone. And think about that play by Tanner Muse. I mean, J.K. Dobbins, he's going to the end zone for another long touchdown. You imagine Clemson trying to come back from that. Then, of course, there's the debate about the targeting call, the scoop and the score mm-hmm. and the reversal on that. So, hey, end of the day, Clemson won the game and they're in there. But Ohio State, I think they were frustrated because they felt they let one get away for sure.
Yeah,
Kevin, that's good because that's really the only way you've gotten any picks right this year was when you were on the wrong side. But and ended
Pollock,
up turning
it doesn't
out okay
make
for
sense.
Me.
How can you be on the wrong side when the score favors me? Like, it's,
hey,
like
Kirk,
your argument
Kirk,
doesn't make
have
sense.
You, have you ever seen bad beats on Van Pelt?
Yes, that was a bad beat for
that
you.
That was a bad beat. That's a part of it. That's just the way
but
things
work.
But
you still lost. In the end, you still lost with your pick. That's
Kevin,
that's
you're
the
still
point.
400 picks behind me for the season.
Oh,
so really, let's not talk about losing.
You guys have a totally different show than we have. Oh, man.
And that's why I enjoy Mondays. I enjoy Mondays so much, Herbie. When we tape.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, fellas, we'll still try to do this, of course, in New Orleans. We appreciate you guys joining us together because, we wanted to get one podcast. We can get both you guys together to talk about the matchup. We appreciate it. And obviously, I think Monday can't come soon enough, but, safe travels and we'll see you in New Orleans.
All right.
Appreciate
guys.
It, dude.
Big thanks to our producer, Taylor Schwenk, on the other side, coordinating and getting Herbie and Pollock together. Loved it and hope to have the guys together next Wednesday, too, to recap what we see Monday in New Orleans between LSU and Clemson. I want to thank our sponsor as well, Allstate. Before we get out of here, be sure to check out today's episode of ESPN Daily. If you're looking for more quality college football content, Andrea Adelson, who was on the podcast last week, talks to Mina Kimes about the road Clemson has taken to becoming a national powerhouse and why so many people still doubt them. Reminder, our next podcast is coming out later this week. Chris Fowler and Emmanuel Acho with a closer look at LSU Clemson as we get closer to the national championship on Monday night on ESPN.